It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Broken borders. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast.
If they will not go to the border, we're taking the border to them.
The Biden White House is threatening to take legal action against Republican governors for sending illegal immigrants to Democratic cities.
Republicans are playing politics with human beings, using them as props. What they're doing is simply wrong. It's un-American. It's reckless.
The president said to be exploring his litigation options to counter the migrant transports to places like Washington, D.C., Chicago, New York, and now fancy schmancy Martha's Vineyard. Democrat Richard Neal of Massachusetts.
This is a taxpayer-funded private jets, quite an expense, for a political stunt.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton.
The political stunts are being pulled by the Biden administration. They are refusing to protect our states. People are moved around by the Biden administration every day secretly, all illegally.
Still, California Governor Gavin Newsom suggests the action taken by GOP Governors Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis is akin to kidnapping. Hillary Clinton today called it human trafficking. But the governors won't back down.
The minute even a small fraction of what those border towns deal with every day is brought to their front door, they all of a sudden go berserk, and they're so upset. It just shows you, you know, their virtue signaling is a fraud.
DeSantis defending the move to fly dozens of migrants to Martha's Vineyard. Abbott sent two buses of illegal immigrants to Vice President Harris's home in the D.C. suburbs. Texas Congressman Michael Burgess.
Look, God bless Greg Abbott. God bless Governor DeSantis. Had they not taken the actions that they've taken, the national press would not be talking about this. It is important to push this story to the front pages because I assure you it is on the front pages of every small Texas town where they're having to deal with this on an ongoing basis.
America's broken borders led to a record number of illegal migrant crossings this year, 2 million and counting. A special master has been appointed to look at the evidence collected in the FBI raid on Donald Trump's home in Florida last month. Federal Judge Raymond Deary will serve as the independent arbiter. Legal analyst Lori Levinson.
And he's generally known as a no-nonsense judge who knows how important it is to get this job done and to do it fairly.
As for the former president, Mr. Trump telling the Hugh Hewitt Show today what may happen if he's indicted.
I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it.
What kind of problems, Mr. President?
I think you'd have big problems. Big problems.
Trump's charged with violating the Presidential Records Act by removing classified material from the White House when he left office. Overseas in the UK, the long line to view the late Queen reached its capacity limit today. Correspondent Keir Simmons.
The line's quite extraordinary. 14 hours wait, 5 miles. They've had to put those lines on hold, suspend them, because they are just full to capacity. And yet, folks are telling us they are going to keep coming until that state funeral on Monday.
The Queen's funeral set for 6 a.m. our time Monday morning. With the retreat of Russian forces from Ukraine comes the discovery of mass graves in the territory that Russia once occupied.
A grim discovery here in Izium. This forest is filled with the bodies of dozens upon dozens of civilians buried in shallow graves, some of them killed when Russian tanks and artillery rained down on this town, others executed.
Correspondent Deborah Pata, a major victory for 10,000 service members in the U.S. Air Force who refused the COVID shot. A judge has granted them protection from punishment if they choose not to get the jab.
There's systemic religious discrimination going on in the military, particularly in processing these vaccine mandates. And, you know, it's a huge win.
Chris Weiss is the attorney representing the airman. Joe Dill says he was discriminated against because he wouldn't get the shot.
It's a big one. It's a tremendous one. It's not just just for me, though. It's big picture. It's for the entire Air Force and hopefully the entire military community as a whole.
The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals said that the COVID shot requirement caused irreparable harm to those unvaccinated airmen. Marines and the vaccines also in the news. The U.S. Marine Corps rescinding a policy that refused religious exemptions to the COVID shot. A federal judge in Florida issued a preliminary injunction that stops the Marines from punishing those who refuse the jab on religious grounds. A new survey shows Christianity will not be the dominant religion in this country by the year 2045.
What we've seen is higher and higher proportions of the population moving away from specifically Christianity to atheist or agnostic.
Allison Gray of St. Mary's University says one reason people leave the faith is they think the church has become too political.
People who identify as liberal are more likely to disaffiliate from organized religion.
In 1990, 90% of Americans called themselves Christian. Today, it's under 64%. The jersey worn by Michael Jordan in Game 1 of the 1998 NBA Finals has sold for more than $10 million at auction. The Jordan jersey, the most expensive piece of sports memorabilia ever sold at auction. It was worn during his sixth NBA championship run and last dance with the Chicago Bulls. Still to come on the Noon Report, debate date. Big question mark there. The impact of early voting and the world's largest yard sale.
Good afternoon. The weekend is just about upon us, and it's going to be warming up around these parts. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10 minutes.
All right. We will see you then. Thanks, Kevin. Let's check the stories making news across New York and Pennsylvania. Republican Lee Zeldin is attacking Governor Kathy Hochul for not setting a debate date in the New York governor's race.
The Long Island congressman says with increasingly important absentee ballots going out in a week, Hochul is continuing to duck him. She said she'd debate her GOP rival nearly a month ago, but hasn't said when, where, or how many times. Debates would offer Zeldin a chance to raise his profile and capitalize on any gaffes by the Gov. Polling, well, that's all over the place, with Hochul in the lead by anywhere from 6 to 24 points. Sarah Lee Kessler, New York.
Pennsylvania U.S. Senate candidate Dr. Mehmet Oz says one debate is not enough with his Democratic rival John Fetterman. The lieutenant governor's only agreed to one debate 2 weeks before the election.
I'm skeptical of what's going to happen if he'll show up in this debate that's scheduled 2 weeks before the election. He's often a no-show. He doesn't show up for his lieutenant governor's job.
Fetterman will get special accommodations at the debate because of a recent stroke he suffered.
The liberal press has been hiding this issue of his health. They've been hiding his radical positions. This man cares more about criminals than the innocent.
Oz accuses Fetterman of not wanting to debate him so he can avoid having to defend his radical left ideology. The Oz-Fetterman debate scheduled for October 25th in Harrisburg. A conservative activist in Albany says early voting's a big concern in the run-up to the midterms. I talked about it today with Jason McGuire at New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedom. Nick Langworthy, who's, of course, running for Congress, the state GOP chair, he had a press conference this week, and there's been a lot of concern about absentee ballots. He says there's some real funny business going on, and it's downright deceitful with some of these partially filled out absentee ballots made to look like government documents being mailed to New York State voters. Is there a story here?
Yeah, I think there is a story. You know, this is the kind of thing that during the legislative session, when there was talk of election reform or voter reform, and you see these kinds of things passing that many conservative-minded people, such as myself, were talking about. We were concerned that if you can fill in this information or you do everything absentee ballot or you can choose to do absentee for any reason at all, including in this case, they're still citing COVID as the reason for voting this way, it just really lowers the bar for election integrity. So I really long for the day when we just voted on one day. We all showed up. We voted. We're not going back there, though. And so Republican and conservative candidates are going to want to improve what they're doing in those absentee and early voting days. If we're ever going to win these elections, we got to get better at turning out earlier and earlier.
Yeah, and that seems to be the thing. I mean, you said years ago, if you're pro-early voting, you'll get to the polls early. I love that line. But it seems like voting day is now voting month. I mean, people have so much time now. They're voting before they even know where the candidates stand. I know in Pennsylvania, across the border from you, Dr. Oz has been challenging John Fetterman for a debate, but Fetterman won't debate him until after the early voting starts. Is this doing a disservice to our election system to have so much early voting now in New York?
Well, I think it is. That's how we were opposed to it. I mean, even what started as 10 days of early voting, you're right, is now really 30 days before in how absentee balloting works.
Yeah.
If you think about it, absentee ballots are going out in New York in about 2 weeks. But if you visit the County Board of Election websites, they can't even tell you your new districts yet online. You need to call and find out what your district is.
Hmm.
You can't be an informed voter if you don't even know who the candidates are going to be in your particular district.
Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedom. So the Pennsylvania House has voted to hold Philadelphia's embattled district attorney in contempt. It's due to Larry Krasner's failure to comply with subpoenas related to the crime crisis in Philly.
If we had a Republican governor like Ron DeSantis in Florida, you know what we'd do? We'd, at bare minimum, suspend Larry Krasner, if not outright arrest him today for not complying with this subpoena. He should show up in Harrisburg and answer questions. His refusal to do so, at a minimum, should get him suspended.
Philadelphia radio talk show host Chris DeGaulle says the crime crisis in his city is unprecedented.
A cemetery in Delaware County is so overrun, the grave diggers cannot keep up with digging the fresh graves to bury those killed by violence in Philadelphia. Workers at Friends Southwestern Cemetery, Upper Darby, 90% of new burials are victims of gun violence in Philadelphia. If that doesn't sum it up, I don't know what does.
No city in America has more shootings or shooting victims this year than does Philadelphia. Efforts continue to try and avoid a strike at Kaleida Health, Western New York's largest health care provider. Workers are flexing their union muscles to gain more power at the bargaining table. They're giving the union bosses the right to call a strike. Tara Lynch with WIVB in Buffalo.
Union leaders now have the power to call a strike at any time at all Kaleida facilities. Now, this doesn't mean that they will go on strike immediately. They do have to give the hospital system a 10-day notice.
A strike would impact five hospitals in Western New York. Pay, benefits, and staffing issues are the key sticking points in the ongoing negotiations.
You shouldn't come into work thinking it's going to be worse than it was yesterday. We have to make a change, and today, hopefully, is the start of making that change.
This vote today is just us telling Kaleida we've had enough of the last 3 years. Step up and take care of us. We took care of this community, now take care of us.
Kaleida Health says any strike would be devastating and dangerous to the Buffalo community. They say one man's trash is another man's treasure, and you can experience that firsthand this weekend in Western New York. The world's largest yard sale is back at the Erie County Fairgrounds in Hamburg. Organizer Karen Kaneko.
This is our 22nd year for doing the event, and we do it twice a year in the spring and in the fall, so this is our fall version of it. And we have tons of vendors, thousands of items, incredible bargains. It's just unbelievable.
The world's largest yard sale runs till 4 o'clock this afternoon and again tomorrow from 9 to 4 at the fairgrounds there in Hamburg, New York. Let's pause for sports, our midday edition here on the Family Life Noon Report.
Good afternoon, I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, Justin Herbert threw four touchdown passes last night. Unfortunately, one of them was a 99-yard pick six in the fourth quarter to Kansas City's Jalen Watson, and that gave the Chiefs the lead that they never relinquished. KC held on to win the game 27-24. Patrick Mahomes threw for 235 yards and a pair of scores. Chiefs now 2-0 on the young season. To baseball, the New York Mets increased their lead over the Atlanta Braves with a 7-1 win over the Pirates. Carlos Carrasco struck out 11 over six innings, and Francisco Lindor hit his 24th home run to put the Mets a full game up on the Braves, who did not play. Despite Kyle Schwarber's 38th home run on the season, the Phillies fell to the Marlins 5-3. Philadelphia going to Atlanta tonight to start a key three-game series. The Reds edged St. Louis 3-2, and Arizona shut down San Diego 4-0. In the American League, the Tampa Bay Rays made history in their 11-0 rout of Toronto. The Rays became the first team ever to start nine players all from Latin American countries. All nine wore number 21 on their jerseys to honor Roberto Clemente Day. By the way, with the win, Tampa now sits just a half game behind Toronto for the top AL wildcard spot. The White Sox pulled within three games of Cleveland in the Central with an 8-2 win over the Guardians. Twins are four back as they beat Kansas City 3-2, and Houston won over Oakland 5-2. And in case you missed it, arguably the best men's tennis player ever has announced his retirement. 41-year-old Roger Federer is hanging up his racket. That is a look at sports.
All right, thank you very much, Randy. Still to come on the Noon Report for Friday, Pennsylvania's March for Life. Flying cars are here, and Kev's calling for a warmer weekend.
Welcome to Breakpoint, the daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. I'm John Stone Street. It's tempting to think that secularized academics are simply too intellectual to ever come to the kind of childlike faith that Jesus described, or that if they were ever really to trust Christ, well, then they'd have to abandon all their academic pursuits. However, like once liberal theologian Thomas Oden or once radical feminist English professor Rosaria Butterfield, the case of Rodney Stark suggests otherwise. Dr. Stark's research and reading specifically about the impact of Christianity throughout history was part of what moved him to become a committed believer. And back in July, Dr. Stark passed away. He meant enough to us at the Colson Center that we wanted to acknowledge his important work and contribution. Stark was born in North Dakota in 1934. Oddly enough, he played high school football with none other than Alvin Plantinga, one of the great Christian philosophers of the last generation. After a stint in the Army, he studied journalism in college. He graduated in 1959. Once, during his early career as a reporter, he was asked to cover a meeting of the Oakland Spacecraft Club. The speaker claimed to have visited Mars, Venus, and the moon in a flying saucer. So Stark reported the story straight, with no sarcasm or snide comments. And then he was assigned all of the other odd stories that came along. That ability to treat people's beliefs seriously and to recognize that at least for them they were plausible, that was a key element in his decision to shift from journalism to sociology. He focused his research on why people were religious. How did they understand their faith? What did they get out of it? How did they live it out? What he concluded was that conversion was a rational choice based on an expectation that one would receive more from their religious choice than it would cost them to make it. His book, The Rise of Christianity, was published in 1996. In it, Stark argued that the incredible growth and spread of Christianity was because it offered more to people than any of its competitors at the time. In particular, Stark argued that the rapid growth of the church was, in large part, due to how Christians treated women. This, especially when compared to the pagan treatment of women, led to more conversions. That led to the faith being spread through social networks. Also, prohibitions against abortion and infanticide led to an organic growth of the church. And how Christians responded to persecution and plagues led to a growth in credibility. Stark then wrote what could be his greatest book. It was called The Victory of Reason: How Christianity Led to Freedom, Capitalism, and Western Success. That was published in 2005. In 2004, just the year before The Victory of Reason was published, Stark commented, quote, "I have trouble with faith. I'm not proud of this. I don't think it makes me an intellectual. I would believe if I could, and I may be able to before it's over," end quote. Well, the book, The Victory of Reason, was what first brought Dr. Stark and his work to the attention of none other than Chuck Colson. Chuck was astounded that a self-professed agnostic sociologist was so clear-eyed and honest enough to recognize and highlight the effects of Christianity on the world. Chuck featured The Victory of Reason on Breakpoint. He also included it in the Centurions program, which is now known as the Colson Fellows program. After that Breakpoint commentary aired, Rodney Stark reached out to Chuck Colson and thanked him for the kind words. And he told Chuck that he had come to faith in Christ, something he publicly announced in 2007. He continued to produce important and sometimes controversial books on Christianity, history, and culture. Throughout his career, Stark was an irascible critic of political and religious biases in the academic world, especially his own field of sociology. His intellectual brilliance, not to mention his wonderful ability to tell stories, is communicated in his groundbreaking sociological work and his books. But his intellectual honesty and integrity is revealed in his faith, a faith that he spent many, many years studying. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Thank you very much, John. Kevin Williams. Weekend weather next.
Good afternoon. Here is your family life weather forecast. Call for this afternoon. Decent amount of sunshine, a little hazy. from some high-altitude western wildfire smoke. High temperatures in the 70s. Tonight becoming mainly clear. Low temps in the upper 40s to mid-50s. Not as chilly as last night. Mostly sunny, warm tomorrow near 80. Sunday, some sunshine and warm. A late day shower, a thunder shower in parts of New York and northwest Pennsylvania. High temperature Sunday in the 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. We'll take it. It is Friday, the 16th of September, and this is the Noon Report on Family Life. And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are this week Michael Geer of the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Sadly, we don't have Jason McGuire with us today at New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms, but Michael, there is plenty to talk about in Pennsylvania, and it is nearly here. All the months of planning coming to a head on Monday. It's the second annual March for Life in Harrisburg. If you would just tell us a little bit, what will happen on Monday? What will that look like? And is there still time for listeners who may want to attend to get a bus ride to the state capitol?
Sure, I'd love to talk about it because we're really excited about what's coming this coming Monday, September 19th here in Harrisburg. It's going to be on the Capitol steps, same place where we had it last year. Last year was the inaugural Pennsylvania March for Life, and we had over 5,000 people that attended. And what was notable about it is the first event that I've ever seen at the Capitol where the stage, the platform, was actually at the bottom of the steps looking up towards the Capitol, and it almost formed a natural amphitheater there. And that meant the speakers and the sound system and those who were speaking from the stage were being heard inside the Capitol, including apparently by Governor Wolf, who tweeted in the middle of the march. He said this so-called March for Life, he put it in quotes, is actually an anti-woman march, which is kind of a joke. That's the nature of this governor. But that'll be from 11 to noon. That's the main rally. And then from then, there'll be the march around the Capitol grounds. Probably take 45 minutes to an hour for the crowd to circulate around there. And we do have dozens of buses coming from all over the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, including many right in the listening area of people who are hearing our voice right now. You know, there are many buses that still have a few open seats. They can go to our website at pafamily.org. They'll see a graphic about the March for Life. If they click on that, then they'll see a link that says Find a Bus.
Yeah.
And that's where they can see that listing.
And we will announce that website again at the end of this conversation. I was just watching a podcast this morning with a couple media critics who have taken kind of a look back at how the mainstream media covers the abortion issue over the past 25, 30 years. And they were making the point that the slant in the mainstream media has never been more pronounced. The slant towards the pro-choice side has never been more pronounced than it is now. As a guy who used to work in media, I would be very curious to know, why do you think that is?
Yeah, the slant has been around for a long time, but it is really bad now. I used to tell the story, if the news media came to cover a pro-life event and let's say it was gathering of 250 people or something, the news media would typically, the mainstream media would say it was a gathering of about 10 people and no one was arrested.
Yeah, right.
You know, because you know, they always say that these are the violent people, when we know that the pro-life people are the ones that are caring for women and running pregnancy resource centers. There's a variety of different reasons why that's the case. People in the mainstream media sort of tend in a liberal direction. But the other part of it, though, that's made it different now is that people in the news media think it's absolutely okay to let their biases show. My dad was in the news media, and, you know, he was a pretty liberal guy, but you would never know it from any of the news coverage that he did because he viewed it as a duty to maintain neutrality, and that's been tossed out the window.
Yeah, I know Peter Jennings, a guy that you used to work for, had a religion correspondent hired because he knew that, hey, religion isn't my stick. He actually went out and hired Peggy Wehmeyer, first media religion correspondent, because he understood that. That was a time gone by. But I've always wondered, is it an intentional, adversarial kind of a position that the mainstream media takes when it comes to the life issues, or is it more driven by pure ignorance? Their circle of friends aren't pro-life people, so is it intentional or is it ignorance?
It's a little bit of both, and I think more intentional these days because people, I think, are trying to infiltrate these kinds of places. You know, the ideological people infiltrate these jobs. But I do remember Peggy Noonan wrote in one of her early books, she was working on Sundays, and she wrote a script that said something like, well, most people were enjoying Sunday brunch right now. This happened. And her editor said, you know what, Peggy, most people aren't in America today are not enjoying Sunday brunch right now. They're at church. She was just ignorant of it. And so there is that ignorance of how many of the people, they now call it flyover country or just in normal America, live in the elite centers of thinking are the ones that are driving a lot of what we see in the media.
Yeah. Special edition of Capital Connection this week. We are flying solo with Michael Gear at the Pennsylvania Family Institute, whose second annual March for Life is coming up in just a few days. You are the first state in the country to host one of these events post-Roe. The gravity of that, has that set in yet?
Well, there's two facets to it. The overwhelming joy that the pro-life movement rightly felt when Roe versus Wade was overturned. And I guess the flip side of it, or the challenge that we face now, is the Dobbs decision overturning it did not make abortion illegal, but it did highlight the division still remains. And those same media people that you talked about in the abortion industry are sort of in league together telling lies about what the overturn of Roe means.
I know Jason, who is on this program with you, has said many times that his prayer is that New York would become a pro-life state in his lifetime. Does the Dobbs v. Jackson decision, as much as we cheer that decision, does that make something like that in some of these more liberal states like New York, California, does that make that increasingly unlikely to happen in our lifetime?
It creates different challenges. I mean, the pro-abortion forces, including governors like yours in New York, saw that, you know, Roe versus Wade might be overturned, and they could use it as a political thing to advance their cause, and so they're doing these tourism abortion promotions, and companies are saying $4,000 they'll give to an employee to go get an abortion or travel somewhere to get it. So those are things I never thought we'd see in our country, this, you know, blatant promotion of abortion, encouraging it. And so that's something to be dealt with. I think on the positive side for the pro-life movement is that this is the time for people who really do care about the sanctity of life to be engaged in really the front lines of the pro-life movement, which is the pregnancy resource centers and the maternity homes, showing women that it is the pro-life movement that really cares not just for that baby, but about all of life in terms of caring for these women. This is a real opportunity. So I think Jason's prayer is still one to continue to pray. It's one that we pray for in Pennsylvania. We're not as pro-abortion in our laws as New York, but we still allow abortions in Pennsylvania up till 6 months.
Again, the second annual March for Life is coming up on Monday, September 19th. And Michael, many pundits are saying that abortion issue will drive a lot of Democrats to the polls in droves this November, as much as maybe some economic issues might drive Republicans to the polls. I don't think I remember in my lifetime a campaign season where there were more polar opposites when it comes to the life issue, whether it's the governor's race or that U.S. Senate contest. Where Doug Mastriano is on this issue compared to Josh Shapiro, and where Dr. Mehmet Oz is on this issue compared to John Fetterman, who even said this week that he would blow up the filibuster to get abortion codified into law. Talk about that, if you would, in closing, just how polar opposite these candidates are on the life issue.
Yeah, they're absolutely polar opposites. There's no question about it. And for the first time in history, abortion has risen to the top in terms of even what many political ads are about, because both sides, especially the pro-abortion side right now, because of the fear-mongering that's going on from the news media and the abortion industry, see this as something to scare people into voting. And so with that kind of fear-mongering and scaremongering, that's the kind of thing that does cause people to get involved, politically engaged, and vote that otherwise might not. This is just points back to the challenge that those who consistently said, you know, I think Roe versus Wade should be overturned, I think abortion is wrong, that they should be equally as motivated, and I think many of them are. And so we're going to see come November with these elections just which side is more motivated, and I'm certainly praying and hoping that it's going to be the pro-life side.
All right, much to be in prayer about for sure. Again, the March for Life, this country's first March for Life since the Roe decision back in June. Coming up Monday, September 19th, and I know a lot of people listening to this are going to want to go, and there are ways that they can go free of charge, save a little money at the gas station. You have bus trips going to the Capitol Monday, Michael. Where can folks find out more about that and the rally in general?
Get our website at pafamily.org. Has the bus information. You click on the March for Life graphic that's there, and then you'll see a link that says find a bus. Right. And that's the way to do it there.
All right. Thank you very much, Michael. Michael Gear at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Oh, by the way, we will have Jason back next week. Capital Connection comes your way every Friday during the Noon Report or online anytime. Check it out at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. After some chilly weather recently, warmer weather is ahead as a warm front will cross the area, allowing temperatures to head into the 80-degree range tomorrow and Sunday. Most of the weekend looks rain-free, but the approach of a front will generate a couple of showers and rumbles for some late Sunday and Sunday night. And our call for this afternoon, decent amount of sunshine, a little hazy from some high-altitude western wildfire smoke, high temperatures in the 70s. Tonight becoming mainly clear, low temps in the upper 40s to mid-50s, not as chilly as last night. Mostly sunny, warm tomorrow near 80. Sunday, some sunshine and warm. A late day shower, a thunder shower in parts of New York and northwest Pennsylvania. High temperature Sunday in the 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Finally, Noon, back to the future. And it's looking increasingly like that future is here.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going, we don't need roads.
Yeah, you got it. A flying car is being tested at the North American Auto Show in Detroit. Fire Captain James Davis got a turn at the wheel of that futuristic hovering automobile.
Nice and smooth. I ride a Harley anyway, so it was just like riding a motorcycle up in the air.
Flying motorcycle, that's what it's like. The company behind this flying car, Aero Auto, is hopeful to start selling its X Turismo soon. That's what they're calling that flying car there in Detroit. And that's the world we live in, Friday, the 16th of September. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.